Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 13, Episode 5.
This is Writing Excuses, Villain, Antagonist, Obstacle.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Mary.
I'm Dan.
And I'm in the way.
Okay, so this is a parallel to last month's episode where we talked about hero, protagonist, main character. We're going to talk about villains, but also antagonists, but also obstacles. What are the difference between these things?
So imagine kind of the classic movie plot about the kid who wants to do something artistic. Okay, he's going to play violin in a concert. Maybe what is stopping him is a traffic jam and he can't get there. That's an obstacle. Maybe what's stopping him is his dad who really wants him to play football. He's an antagonist. Maybe what's stopping him is a psychopath trying to murder him. That's a villain.
I'm gonna say that actually obstacles can be people. They don't have to
they
be.
They can be, yes.
And I would argue, so for me, the difference between an antagonist and an obstruction or an obstacle is that an antagonist is actively working against the goals of the protagonist. Mm-hmm. They're an active opposition, whereas an obstacle or an obstruction is something that the protagonist has to overcome, but doesn't necessarily change the direction of the story. Mm-hmm. It is not necessarily something that is intrinsically part of the story.
In Dan's example, you could say even, I want to get first chair in the symphony, right? I want to play the piano. An antagonist can just be another good violinist who is working for that same goal. That's not a villain. Now, when that person takes your violin and smashes it, then they have become a villain instead of just an antagonist. And an obstacle can simply be, I don't play violin well enough.
Yeah. Well, obstacle, if you want to look at the obstacle as a person, kid wants to learn to play violin, or kid wants to, you know, take first chair, and mom falls ill. And mom is not actively doing anything to work against him. She's not an antagonist. She's certainly not a villain, but him needing to care for her is in the way of what he's trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that can create, I mean, that obstacle that I've just thrown down, I want to cry, because this kid has a huge obstacle in front of him, and solving that problem is going to take resources that he or she might not have any access to.
Man, you guys really nailed this one really fast.
Well, we're done.
That's because I'm evil.
Your 3 minutes long.
Is come up with a reason he can't play violin that we haven't talked about yet.
I think we also spend a lot of time thinking about villains, antagonists, and obstructions, because when you're building the story, if those are not structured well, it affects your main character and the reader's enjoyment of the story. You have to have one that is well-crafted and serving the purpose that you want. Like in my Jane Austen with magic stuff, I don't need a villain, you know? And sometimes I don't actually even need an antagonist. I need a lot of obstacles and obstructions. But there doesn't necessarily need to be someone who's like sitting there going, I shall prevent her from being married.
It's worth pointing out here, and I think we should, is that when we're talking about obstacle in this context, we're talking about the more personal sort of thing rather than the person versus nature story, which I think we're going to cover in a couple
of
weeks.
We'll cover next week.
Oh, just next week. Yeah. Next week. Okay.
Well, and I think one of the other things that I want to draw a line between is that, and this is something that I picked up from Margaret Dunlop when she was talking about the difference between a conflict and an obstacle, is that, you know, a conflict will cause the story to change. And an obstacle is just something that stands in the main character's path. And I think that that's one of the things with an antagonist or an obstruction is that you can have someone, like you can have the traffic cop that won't let you through. And that's an obstacle. That's a person, that's an obstacle, but they are not changing the shape of the story. An antagonist is a driver, and an obstacle is not. An obstacle is just something that's in the way. An antagonist is driving the story, is one of the drivers.
So in your stories where you've decided not to use a villain or even antagonist, what did you gain? Why did you make that decision?
So one of the things that for me, I was writing a pastiche, so that was part of what was going on for me, was one of the reasons that I chose to do that. But the reason that I have done that in some other things is that it focuses the energy of the story on the main character. It causes them to be weirdly much more proactive because there isn't anyone else driving the story. A lot of times when you have an antagonist, they can wind up driving the story and causing the main character to be entirely reactive. So a lot of times the reason that an obstacle is more useful is if you're doing a story that has somewhat lower stakes in terms of, you know, it's not the world is ending. If you want to do a more intimate story, it's much easier to do a more intimate, quieter story without and have your protagonist be active if you are not dealing with someone else who's
stealing focus.
You're
also more likely in that circumstance, I say more likely, it's going to be potentially a lot easier for you to generate a sympathetic protagonist working against this obstacle because you've got something that's more likely to be the sort of thing that we all face.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time we don't actually in real life face antagonists. I have.
There are people.
There are people. They're really generally terrible people. But an antagonist is someone who is, I think, actively working against the interests of the protagonist. And then a villain, I think, is someone who has an agenda that they are going to, you know,
I would put the definitions for me that a villain is actively evil and an antagonist isn't always.
Yeah.
Someone can be working against you and not be evil, and have good motivations or good motives. Dan, you're really good at villains.
Yeah.
You're good at villains.
Why is that?
Who are also really evil, but also very sympathetic at the same time, which is something you don't see very often. How do you do it? Why do you do it? And how do you make a good villain?
I don't know.
They just come so naturally.
Why are you just on this podcast then?
It just is, it's easy.
Just have them do what I would do.
It's just like writing a sociopathic point of view. Everyone can do that, right? Villains, the way that I plan all of my villains, and in fact, the John Cleaver books in particular, which is what I suspect you're thinking of when you ask the question, all of those books are designed as much around the villain as they are around the protagonist, as they are around John. I have to know what John is going to do. In fact, when I sit down to plot out a new book, the two questions are, how is John going to change? And what does the villain want? And how can those two relate to each other? And they have to find a way, at least for me, they have to find a way to relate to each other. Or else there's no point to it. But, you know, you touched on something earlier before we started recording called the DC syndrome.
Yes.
Where the villain will overpower the story because he or she is so much cooler than the main character is. And maybe this says a lot about me, but I have found that if I aim for that and then make sure to give the hero something good to do anyway, that the balance comes out pretty good.
You're going to try to make, you know, a story where the villain is more interesting than the main character and then force your main character to catch up.
Yes.
Okay, fascinating.
Which works really well with John Cleaver because he is already, you know, I know him really well.
I think this is a structure that works also, it's not just with John Cleaver, but also your books are structured as suspense thrillers. Mm-hmm. I mean, their build is horror, but they're structured as suspense thrillers. And in suspense thrillers, one of the things that is happening structurally is that your main character is always a step behind. And that rush to try to catch up and to avoid being overtaken is part of what is driving those. That's part of the energy. Whereas other structural formats, I don't think that works so well. Like having a full-on villain and a murder mystery.
Yeah, that's the one I was just thinking of while you were talking.
Does not work as well.
Yeah, because then a lot of the mystery would disappear.
Because
mm-hmm. the villain is so overwhelming.
And if you want to build a structure like that, yeah, you've got a villain in a murder mystery. The murder mystery is act one, and the discovery that you are up against a supervillain is what carries you into act two and act three.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge, and I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/WX. Hey, writers. Are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Let's stop there for our book of the week. Dan, you have a book coming out this month.
Yay! Okay, my new book is called Active Memory. It is the third book in the Mirador series, which is young adult cyberpunk. It is a... Speaking of murder mysteries, it is a cyberpunk murder mystery ghost story. set in the year 2050 in Los Angeles when everyone has a computer installed in their brain. And it's awesome. If you've read the other Mirador books, this is far and away the best one. This answers a lot of the questions that have been brewing throughout the series.
And I have loved the Mirador books.
Great. Thank you very much. Also, this one has, appropriately, the best villain. The best villain of the three.
I'm glad that you escalate. It's pretty much the only way to go.
When is it out?
It comes out this month.
Yeah, you're not sure.
I don't know the day.
We're recording this ahead of time.
This is the third week, which means it's probably out by now.
No, this is the first week.
This is the first week?
Yeah.
It's not out yet.
But it will be out very
shortly. It'll be out like next week.
All right, we talked about the DC syndrome. Let's talk about the Marvel syndrome. Marvel, specifically the Marvel Cinematic Universe syndrome, where the villains are all interchangeable and basically
there's multiple
boring.
Villains?
Yeah. How do you avoid making your villain of your story into that? Just bad guy who shows up at the end to have a fist fight with the main character end.
You know, all of their villains just want to take over the world.
Mm.
And world domination is kind of boring.
Yeah, it's really boring.
Yeah, the driving evil of the MCU is collect the Infinity Stones and rule the universe, and everybody wants a piece of that. And yeah, every time a villain does that, we kind of know what it is that they're up to, and we've seen it before. The thing that I like about what the MCU does, and I think the Avengers is a great example of this, and it's why knowing your antagonist and your villain and your obstacle character is so important, is that in a superhero film, one of the goals is for the viewer, the viewer wants to see everybody fight everybody else. You want to see Hulk fight Thor. You want to see Iron Man fight Captain America. And so when you look at the way these stories are built, if Iron Man is going to fight Cap in the Avengers, it's got to be because they're having a personal disagreement and it's sort of an obstacle. If we want to have Hulk fight Thor, well, Hulk is an obstacle every time he Hulks out. Somebody's got to fight him and put him back in his banner. And so the structure of these, it's fascinating to look at because our villain in the Avengers, Loki, yes, he's a lot like all of the other villains, but he is not the one who is driving all of these fights.
Well, and he's the best of the MCU because he has a personal connection to the main characters.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's relatable. So it kind of talks about taking all that stuff we talked about last month and stuffing it into the villain shell is why Loki works.
Well, and I think it's about making sure that they have a specific goal. And that's one of the things with Loki. He is doing these things for very specific reasons. We never know why anybody else wants to take over the universe. It's, for me, also the same reason why in the Star Wars universe, Darth Vader is a really interesting villain. And Emperor Palpatine, eh.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care about them overcoming Emperor Palpatine. He will come and spooky lightning, but you know,
that's the official term on the wiki.
Yeah,
spooky lightning.
I'm sure that's like the spell you can cast in the role playing game. I want to step in very quickly and point out that we are all bagging on what is at the end of the day a profoundly successful formula.
Yeah, it is.
And one of the things that that Marvel does very well with its kind of milquetoast villains is that it allows them to focus on the heroes in a different way. And you get to know them really well and you get to see them a lot. And so,
yeah, it's hard to fault success.
I think there's something to be said about the DC version as well, where the Joker is so much cooler than Batman is. Both of them can work if that's what you're going for.
Let me ask, to kind of wrap this up, let's take it away from villains and to antagonists. Why might you want to write an antagonist who's not evil? What do you gain? Any suggestions on writing somebody who is an antagonist, a serious antagonist, but not an evil person?
So I have one of the things for me is, again, it's about scaling. You know, if you have people with superpowers, then, you know, The boss who just won't let them use the copier
that's a story, but it's very different. Yeah.
So one of the things is it affects the scale of the story that you're telling. The other thing I think is that one of the things we talk about some in previous seasons is looking at an issue from multiple sides. And having a character who is an antagonist allows you to express a different viewpoint about an issue that you want to explore, whether it's, you know, an issue from, or if it's just a topic or a theme, because you're dealing with someone who then has clearly defined goals that are in direct opposition to the main character's goals. So that for me is one of the things that an antagonist can bring to the table.
One of my favorite things to see in a protagonist and it's usually a protagonist, is the discovery that the antagonist isn't evil. And the protagonist has to decide, this thing that we both want and I want it more, or they want it, there is no good or evil here. And if I change, maybe I don't get what I want, and maybe the antagonist does and they change. Or maybe I become the antagonist by finally realizing my dark powers and putting them down.
Yeah, this allows you to do a lot of nuanced stuff, in particular with the emotions that you are making your audience feel. You know, if you've got, going back to the example at the beginning where there's the two people that both want to be first chair violin, you can make one of them look like a villain, make one of them grotesquely wealthy. And so she's had way more, better teachers and longer time and all these other advantages. But that doesn't mean that she's a bad person, you know? And so no matter who wins and who loses at the end, you're going to be happy and you're also going to be sad at the same time. And that's a valuable reaction to produce in your audience.
Mary, you had some homework for us.
Yes. So last month, when we were talking about hero, protagonist, main character, we had you tell a story where you broke the hero, the protagonist, and the main character apart and told it from different viewpoints. What we want you to do this time is, you only have one main character, but they're facing three different types of problems. Same scene. One time you're going to write it where they're just facing an obstacle or an obstruction. The next time you write it, reset everything to zero, and now they're facing an antagonist. And then you do it again, and they're facing a villain.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses is a Dragonsteel production, jointly hosted by Brandon Sanderson, Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, and Howard Taylor. This episode was mastered by Alex Jackson.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.